Hollywood Feed Delivery. 500 squeaky balls for bingo?
Bingo, what did you do?
Oh, and there's more. One XL memory foam dog bed, 75 bully sticks, and a mountain of toys still in the car.
Bingo, did you really order online from Hollywood Feed again?
From tasty treats to tail-wagging toys, get everything your pet loves delivered same day. Check your address and order now at HollywoodFeed.com. Hollywood Feed, more wagging, less waiting.
It's Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. Get up to 35% off select major appliances and save an additional $1,000 when you buy four select LG major appliances. Plus, get a free DeWalt 20-volt max 5-amp-hour battery when you buy a select DeWalt 20-volt max tool. Get the job done for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/26. Selection varies by location while supplies last. See associate or Lowe's.com for more details and qualifying items.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for June the 24th, 2022. This is episode 116. On today's show, we'll be talking about the debut of the Polestar 5 prototype, the Ford Pro electric supervan, and pricing for the 2023 Nissan Leaf. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EVs forum moderator and Inside EVs editor. Joining us today is the debonair, Mr. Tom Malogny, Inside EVs editor and host of the YouTube channel, State of Charge. We also have Max Speed, Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces super fun, super geeky videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. Okay, before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications so you'll know immediately when a new video is published. Like, say, this morning, the Rivian R1T review. We have just went up this morning on the Inside EV's YouTube channel. So if you have that little bell clicked, you would know that. So if you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right. So with that out of the way, welcome, everybody.
Hello, hello. Good morning.
Hey, and hello to all the viewers out there. It's great to have you with us this morning. So let's see, we've got a lot to talk about today, and we're going to try to keep it short. I think we have some of us need to get out of here, and others have writing assignments that we need to get finished today. So let's see, it's what we've been driving. So Kyle, let's start with you, because you have had a heck of a car ownership week. You just like took possession of a Rivian R1T like the week before, I think, or 2 weeks before. And then last Friday after the show, you left here and went to pick up a new Tesla, a Model S Plaid. I don't know. So we had the clip going on there for you in the background. What do you think? Are you happy with your car?
Yeah, well, you know, obviously I didn't a plan for everything to come in at the same week, but it just so happened that we've had this sort of, you know, preparing a few months ago for like what cars are we going to buy over the next year turned into what cars are we going to buy in a 1 week period of time. And yeah, so here we are, and you know, certainly pleased, and it actually worked out really well for us because it, you know, the Plaid's gone in under the knife to get fully detailed and paint corrected and to get sorted as part of a series that I wanted to film on Tesla paint quality. And so, yeah, I've just been driving the Rivian around still. And I got to tell you, though, this Plaid is insane. I already have a small list of some items I need to have fixed. For example, the front trunk needs to be clicked twice to open up. But like little things that I was expecting going into Tesla ownership, as this is my fourth or fifth Tesla, that's how it is. But this thing is just so freaking awesome, crazy fast, crazy efficient. We had to blast down to the airport the other day and did an airport run and back in it, which is really as far as I've driven it so far. And it was like 290 watt hour per mile. And I was hammering it with timing. Like I was just blown away by the efficiency. Anyway, yeah, just crazy fast. We're going to be changing some things about it here very soon. We got some real chonky Martian MW05 wheels that are going to go on there, 10.5 inch wide on all four corners. So it's as big as you can fit in the square setup. and that'll be really sweet. Got some nice sticky rubber on there as well. We're going to do some big brakes from Mountain Pass. We're going to put a round steering wheel on it, and it's going to be, yeah, I just think like the ultimate weapon daily driver, if you will.
Right. So how many times have you launched it so far?
Yeah. Well, so the launching thing isn't really my thing. I like the acceleration, but you do that once and you're like, okay, well, that was kind of fun. But, you know, like anytime someone rides in it. So I'd say it's probably got 20 launches on it or something like that.
Okay. And you still have like the special mode you have to run through to like a sequence to do that now, or is it just...
Yes. Well, like, okay, so the car is really fast no matter what you do. So it's not right. Like you have to put it in drag strip mode, but you basically want to go drag strip mode, left foot hard on the brake, floor it with the right, just like any other car. The front end lowers down into cheetah stance, and then it somewhat rockets off. The problem is the car is so tire limited, it doesn't get traction until about 70, 75 miles an hour, maybe even 80 miles an hour. So you're just spinning all four tires, and it's this crazy sensation that you're like at 80, allegedly, you get this next wave of power because it finally hooks up. And right. So you're like, it almost feels like a gear change. It's not. It's just, oh, finally traction. And then it puts the power down. It's a monster. Now, keep in mind, I ordered the car with the stock aero wheels and tires, and they're much skinnier than the 21-inch wheels you can spec on the car. And I did that on purpose because I wanted to use it for range testing and road trips. And they're not the wheels I'm going to have on the car. I'm going to run Martians, of course. So saving money, and we get more wheels to play around with. And then the big, meaty Martians are going on today. And it'll be real interesting to see the acceleration time difference between sticky tires and not so sticky tires.
Right on. And you said you're going to get a round steering wheel, but for now, are you getting more used to the yoke, or is it still just annoying?
It's actually gotten worse. So when I reviewed the car, I am not a yoke hater. I tried to approach it open, and I'm like, okay, this kind of works. The only real, you know, around town, whatever, it's a novelty thing. I was never really super against it. I guess my one issue that I had with it was, you know, what if I'm trying to slide the car around, or I'm on track and I want to catch the car? I felt that I was driving slower because of the steering wheel when I reviewed it. And now, you know, I'm just using the car as a way to be like, oh my God, I got like a meeting in 10 minutes. Let me, you know, run over to the office. And I'm not trying to think about the car. I'm just using it as a daily driver. And I'm spending too much brain power trying to figure out where to put my hands. And it's actually kind of taking away from the best part of an electric car, in my opinion, which is to not bug you when you don't want it to. It's just the reason I love Teslas is because everything kind of just works. It's an iPhone on wheels. It's not an emotional device. And I can just get in and blast to work. And I don't even have to think about, you know, what am I even driving right now? Whereas in the Plaid, I'm like, oh my goodness, like I got to put my hand here and I got to catch the wheel going around this corner and my turn signals are here. It's really not great.
I think I mentioned before that I drove the custom, there's a German company called Custom Tesla, and they put a yoke on a Model 3, but they started with a Model 3 wheel, made it into a yoke, reupholstered it with the leather, but of course you've still got the stalks, and I found that made a really big difference. You're not hunting for indicators and things like that, and I didn't mind it, apart from being a left-hand drive car, which takes a few seconds of brain programming for me because it's on the different side, and I was on UK roads, which is always a bit weird because you are on the wrong side. I didn't hate it. I just thought it was unnecessary. I was like, well, it's okay, like I'm not a hater, it's fine, it's a yoke. The stalks are important for indicating and gears and stuff, but it just seemed like a thing that didn't need to happen. I didn't feel that it was an improvement. The wheel wasn't broken, but I'm the same as you. I didn't hate it, and some people do go to this company and spec a yoke, but I wonder if they'll go the other way and make a round wheel for the Plaid. They're not yet. They do a lot of sound insulation and stuff like that, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do.
Yeah, I think it's really needed for me, at least, and what I want to do, which is track stuff. You know, we're the Plaid's one of the quickest cars out there. Let's go see what it can actually do when we push it. I want to run this thing at tracks all across the U.S. and not just baby it. So yeah, we need a round wheel. I think honestly, just for safety in those types of environments.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, but if you get a round wheel, how do you deal with the fact that it doesn't have the stalks for the blinkers and the horn, like the horn? You would need a custom. You'd have to put them on the round wheel.
Yeah, but that's right? doable. So I made Ryan Huber. I put the exact setup I would do to this car, which is just like a Model 3. You have your gear shift stock on the right, your turn signal stock on the left with the wiper controls, and then a Model 3 steering wheel, which isn't a very premium steering wheel, but it's better than whatever Tesla put on this thing.
Learning Fast asks, what diameter Martian wheels are you getting?
So they're 20 by 10 and a halves. It's a square setup, so the same size rear as the front tire. And then we're running a AMG spec Michelin Pilot Sport 4S with the foam on the inside. We'll see how it works out. We're kind of trying this OE tire combo from a different automaker for noise, and also their properties are a little bit adapted from an off-the-shelf PS4S tire.
And John Check asks, what did you name the Plaid?
Ooh, did not name the Plaid yet. That's Alyssa's job. She's working on it. We're trying to figure out. We have no clue yet.
All right. So let's keep rolling then. So you did a bunch of, you had also, besides your new Plaid and your new Rivian, you had a loan of a Ford F-150 Lightning. And I think you've sent that back by now, but you did do a number of videos with it that have some interesting results. So on both the Lightning and the Rivian, you did a max weight and efficiency test, basically. So we're looking at some video here where you have this like large water container thing in the back, so you can just fill that up and like max out your payload from there. So I don't know, maybe start with the Rivian, because you did them both. You did like a separate video where you did like a face off, right?
Right. So we, I guess just to touch on the efficiency topic of the two trucks, we probably shot six videos on this topic and only three have gone up right now. We shot one video where the trucks are in their naked state, unladen, you know, running side by side, the same road, same conditions. What's more efficient? What's less? The interesting thing is the F-150 is a much larger truck and much more, you know, utility focused. It's geared towards helping you do things and move things to places. The Rivian's much more of a lifestyle truck. This is a truck that works better for me personally. It's smaller, much more geared towards better driving dynamics. It is not a big lumbering F-150. But that's okay. They both have their place and they don't necessarily compete with each other. They're for different people. However, we said, well, we got both of these electric trucks. Let's just do everything we can with them. Very interesting running them side by side. The F-150 and the Rivian, as far best as we could tell, you'll have to watch the video because we get super nerdy about the procedures, but it's about a 8 to 10% loss in efficiency going with the F-150 over the Rivian, which is less of a impact than we were all expecting because the F-150 is so much bigger. Right. And so that was interesting. Then we decided to individually max out the payload capacity of each truck. Now, each vehicle will have different payloads depending on options, wheels, you know, all of these things. And there's a maximum that you really can't go over. So if you get, I imagine I have to look, a standard battery base F-150 Lightning, it has much more payload than the big battery Platinum with massaging seats and the glass roof and all the extra stuff.
Right. Because the vehicle weight itself eats into that allowance, right?
Yep. So it includes, you know, people and luggage and anything that goes in extra with the vehicle's payload. So the F-150 Lightning had a relatively low payload, I think around 1,600 pounds. The Rivian was, I want to say, around 1,700 pounds. Either way, it wasn't identical. And we basically filled up these water totes to match the weight. Now, there's two issues with doing it this way, which I was kind of bummed about, but it was the best we could do. Water is very much a dynamic load that sloshes, that can impact efficiency because it's constantly moving around. So it's very much just an idea. We justified that with like saying, hey, we're just going down the highway. It's not like we're moving around a lot. So hopefully it'll settle out. The second is the water totes themselves are quite high and the Rivian's a lower truck, and which means there's more of an aero impact from not having the water tote. Now, if we really wanted to do this properly, we'd run the truck with the water tote with no water in it, then add the payload, and look at that difference, because then we're accounting for the aero. But again, time is of the essence here. Either way, even factoring in the aero difference of the water totes, the Rivian lost 7% range or efficiency at 70 miles an hour at full payload. And that makes sense because we're just going down the highway, and we knew this going into it. If you were in hill driving, you'd have to burn more energy to pull it around, but you'd also regen more energy to pull it around. So, you know, trade off there. And the F-150 Lightning, because I think that cab's a bit higher, you can see here, really only lost 5% at max payload. So the moral of the story is load up the vehicles with whatever you need and you're not going to notice any difference.
So the difference, you think empty to full with the thing with the, not in the bed, and was like 10%, you say, maybe?
No, so 7 on the Rivian, 5 on the F-150.
Well, that's not bad at all.
No, it's like, no difference. So little it makes no difference. And actually, the aero impact is quite a lot on the Rivian, because on the Rivian at the back of the cab, you've got that nice little spoiler they put on there as well. That'll be there for one aero reason or another. And you've just ruined it by putting this in the back. So that, yeah, it's not perfect. And actually, the Rivian a little bit disadvantaged. So I think they should be really happy watching this. I think no one's done this test yet. And what's it like driving these vehicles with that water moving around? Because, you know, in race cars, in the fuel tank, you know, they'll have like kind of compartments within compartments to stop movement of where this is just sloshing around. Right. So does that impact the driving dynamics at all or not really?
Yeah. And it's not ideal. The water tote works if you can fill it all the way. And we did another test where we towed with both of these vehicles, and that video is going up this week. We did a towing comparison over the entire Rocky Mountains with a full water tote on trailers, and that you couldn't even tell there was anything sloshing around. This was like you'd come to a stop and you start rocking it. It's like, okay, every input super gentle, let's not make any emergency maneuvers. You know, this was just like, we got to do the test and this is what we have, kind of don't try this at home asterisk. Definitely need to figure out a different way to do max payload testing, but it's what we had at the time. Oh, Dominic,
you're on mute, Dom.
There we go.
Right, I'm on mute. I had like this. I have the sneezing fit today. I think I just sneezed like 7 times. So when you see me disappear from the screen, that's what's going on. Right. So that's pretty cool though. Driving like with a load with a dynamic load like that. That's kind of an interesting experience just on its own. Besides like all the testing procedures, is kind of like how does it handle that? You know,
because that's both trucks were affected.
Right. Equally, you think?
I don't know. I never drove the F-150 with it full. I only drove the Rivian, but I was talking to Jordan who drove the F-150 and he was like, oh yeah, felt that. And I'm like, yep, felt it in the Rivian. Yeah, it definitely got a little bit spicy.
Yeah. Years ago, I had an auto detailing business before I had the restaurant, and I had a van, a Chevy Astro van. And in the back, I put like an 80-gallon water tank because we used to clean cars on site. And, I didn't know anything back. I was like 19. And I put it on like this one side of the van, you know, like not in the middle, in the back. And I'd fill it up with 80 gallons of water. And when I was driving, the whole van would feel like it was going to flip and it didn't go slowly around turns. So I know that sensation of feeling the water push you around. And that was only with 80 gallons, but it was a small van. I can imagine how that must have felt with, you know, how many pounds of water you had back there sloshing around, you know, in the back. But as you said, on 70 mile an hour high range test, I'm sure that's what you did. At constant speed, there's not a lot of movement and the weight doesn't have that big of an impact. And you just proved it. I mean, every now and then we'll do our range tests and we always do them alone. But once in a blue moon, like when I did the Bolt one, I had a second person in the car and I had a million comments. People saying, oh, you ruined the range test. That was 150 pounds that you added in the car. And at a constant speed, the weight doesn't have that much of a difference. If this was a range test where I was stopping and going and I was in the city and then I was speeding up and slowing down, it'd have a much bigger effect because then the vehicle has to pull that weight up to speed. But we get out to 70 miles an hour and then we're just locked in at 70 miles an hour and the weight really doesn't play that big of a role. You just proved it. That's such a small percentage of impact, you know, on with such heavy weight that you had. So I'm glad you did that.
Someone is asking, Urban, oh, it went away. Urban is asking, anyone tried to import Rivian R1T or Ford F-150 Lightning to Europe, or are any available for sale? Thanks. I think it's probably early for that. I don't know.
There will be some in Europe that have been either bought by the car makers or through contacts of the car makers that they've been able to get one. Could you import one and drive it? Yes, legally. You'd have to swap out the cell. So I know someone who imported a Tesla to Australia, and I think it was like $400 to get the connectivity changed. And I believe Tesla did that for a fee, officially. But yeah, would the car work? Yes. Could you charge it on AC? Yes. Could you DC fast charge? Maybe not.
Well, you would maybe only pull one of the three phases.
Yeah.
You might get 16 amp at 230 volt as your max charging rate. And we're going through this right now for a project we're working on. We're trying to figure all this stuff out now.
Yeah. CCS1 and CCS2 sound very similar, don't they, in their names? But they're actually very different in terms of the phases. So, but could you charge it? Maybe. I don't know.
The DC is going to be the easiest because the communication's the same. There's just a resistance check in CCS2 that CCS1 doesn't have. But they make adapters that work on Chevy Bolt, that work on Volvo Polestar stuff. But it's always hard to know if it's going to work on your new car without, you know, having one over there as a test bed. And wouldn't it suck to send a car to Europe and it not be able to charge?
Yes, that would suck.
Yes, it would suck.
I think you could import one quite easily. It wouldn't be cheap. But yeah, you can imagine all of their competitors have long since done their teardown. In fact, Sandy Monroe has done his Rivian teardown. And rated it, if you haven't been watching that series, rates it very highly for a startup company. Things like the battery, he rates the packaging and those kind of things right up there. So the Rivian seems very, very solid and well-made.
Yeah. Speaking of Rivian, Tom, you can't really talk about it yet, but you've been driving a new Rivian this past few days, actually, and you're still at the hotel there on this first drive. Can you talk a little bit about anything about it at all?
No driving impressions. I'm at the Rivian R1S first drive. That's the SUV version of Rivian's new vehicles. And really can't talk much about it other than to say maybe I think it looks good. You know, right. Embargo till first week in July. I think July 6th. So we actually have a little bit wait.
Two more podcasts.
I'm on the next first week. Wave. Yeah, I'm in the first wave, and there's three more waves coming next week. So, unfortunately, we can't really talk about it, much like something that you just did recently, Dom. But look for that content coming up in about 2 weeks. We should you'll see it everywhere. You know, there'll be 1,000 first drive videos and articles up there, and cool vehicle.
God, it's a good looking beast, though, isn't it? Wow, it looks absolutely fantastic. I mean, yeah. Because we don't have truck culture over here, the trucks really mean nothing. I mean, I can look at an F-150 and be like, I get it. But that SUV shape, far, far more popular over here. And also appealing to my eye as well. I just think that looks, it looks beautiful with that flat roof.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah,
the wheelbase is 14 inches less than an R1T. So that might give you a little indication of how the driving dynamics might be different.
Interesting. I didn't think there was any difference. That's fascinating to learn.
How many
the wheelbase is 14 inches smaller.
I wonder if you can see it. It looks so compact. Yeah.
Really?
And that's why you can't get Max Pack on R1S.
Oh,
why wouldn't they just build it exactly the same for their own production lines? Maybe for the vehicle, it needs to be different.
I think it's too short. They should have kept it longer, in my opinion.
Maybe they can make a R1S extra long or something.
That's what they need.
Look at the size of that vehicle. Add 14 inches to the wheelbase. It wouldn't even fit. The wheels would be literally at the corners of the vehicle.
I need to see the two of these things, like the pickup truck and the SUV together, like in person to see how that works. Because it's 14 inches. That's 2 feet. That's like a lot. No, 14 is 1 foot.
Well, it looks tiny compared to an R1T.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. Huh. Okay.
That looks cooler. In the dark, is that dark green? Or is that gray? What color is that?
No, that's like a granite color. Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's really nice. Wow.
So, as yeah, Tom alluded to,
I play with the filter on my phone. So, the color isn't exactly what it is. And the truck in the background is LA Silver.
Wow. So, nice.
As Tom alluded, I've been driving the Cadillac Lyriq this week. Not for too long, but I got some time behind the wheel, but I can't really talk about it yet. Next week's show, I'll be able to talk about it somewhat.
Can you talk about things other than driving impressions?
I mean, I'm not really sure how much I can talk about, you know, the looks. I can talk about what's public, basically.
Well, you could talk about what everything feels like, but I don't know if that's part of – that's not driving the impressions.
It's not driving I think I'm going to save it for next week.
Okay.
To get into the things, but, you know, I enjoyed the experience, I guess I could say. I don't know.
Yeah, you got to be careful with what you say. You know, I for me, it's kind of easy. It's the R1T and the R1S are so similar. You know,
right.
You could just, if people want to ask the feel, the interior, the infotainment system. It's all R1T. You know, it's just that you've got the back seats, you've got short wheelbase, same powertrain. So you could pretty much, I think most people can even figure out what the difference is going to be driving wise. You know, it's there's definitely a difference in the two vehicles. You could, you know, feel it right instantly when you're driving it on road and off road.
Right. Cool. I can't wait to hear about that. It's going to be 2 weeks. So you also see, Kyle, the Ford F-150 Lightning, really quickly, you took on the Hogback Driver Assistance Challenge with Blue Cruise. And so I don't want to spend too much time on this part, but how did it do on your Hogback Challenge?
Good. Better than expected. Did hands-free when we needed it to. Shut hands-free off for all the hard corners. And, you know, had some recommendations for maybe some improvements, such as a little chime when it comes out of hands-free and goes to normal adaptive cruise with lane centering and not hands-free, you know, where it requires torque in the wheel. But, yeah, did better than we all expected.
So some you can't leave it on hands-free the whole time?
So there's no, like, selection. It goes hands-free when it wants to, and then it disables hands-free when it wants to. But it doesn't tell you when it wants to. You have to, like, keep your eyes on the gauge cluster to see.
Right. That's not
Yeah, ideal. That definitely needs, like, a Tesla da-ding, da-ding.
It needs one of those.
Yeah. That's kind of bizarre.
Well, because it's still lane centering either way. So
right.
To me, I can't feel the difference in the truck doing it unless I'm looking. And I got accustomed to be like, oh, there's a corner coming up. Look down and I can watch it. Oh, yeah. Now you got to put your hands on the wheel. But occasionally it would ding at me because I was just looking at the road as one should and didn't even know we had switched out of, you know, hands-free.
Wow, that's kind of bizarre. But anyway, it sounds like it worked pretty well. Some people were saying, like, when Blue Cruise first came out, there were some videos online and, like, they were saying that it couldn't handle, like, a curve in the highway or whatever. But I don't know. Any issues like that?
Curves were not its problem. Straight line was its problem.
Okay.
It was very, very meandering and wandering. Not necessarily in our Hogback video, but just using it up I-25. We have quite a lot of wind here in Colorado and traditionally a side wind going up and down this north-south road. Right. And the truck would be like all over the place. And it loved to get close to cars on the right-hand side. First of all, the truck would like live on the right side of the lane. So we thought, okay, maybe the camera is slightly out of alignment, but it's the truck Ford gave us. It's what we had to work with. Right. And then, you know, we're like brushing up against trucks on the right-hand side. And I was letting it do its thing. But eventually I was just like, okay, when we weren't filming, I turned all that off and I just drove it manually because I did not like its lane placement.
Right. That's kind of interesting and room for improvement, I guess.
Yeah. I think it was a camera misalignment of that particular truck, but I won't know until we try another one.
Right. Oh. And so you get some feedback from some other F-150 Lightning drivers. So you also did a F-150 Lightning charging curve. I think this is probably more interesting for our viewers or listeners. So you did like a 0 to 100% basically?
0 to 90. And then, yeah, I'll explain why I didn't go 100.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, brought the truck to a DC fast charger. First thing I did with it day one, came in from the, you know, picking up the Rivian at the factory and jumped right into the F-150 Lightning and brought it to the DC fast charger. You know, and had some expectations going into it. Now, what's nice is I had all the CAN data of the truck too. So we're looking at temperatures of everything. We're looking at all of the different cell blocks and modules to see how everything's handling the charging session. It definitely does the Ford Boost situation, which I think is what some of our audience has named it. And similar to Mustang Mach-E, Tom has mentioned this in his videos, of course, is you get this peak power for a short period of time before it then comes off of this boost profile and hits its nominal or normal charging curve, if you will. And the F-150 Lightning's no exception. You get about 10 minutes at just rocketing speeds at really, you know, good. And it's the Mustang Mach-E, I think, is pretty short. You only get maybe one, you know, let's just say 3 minutes at this boost. The F-150 Lightning, you get a full 10, and it does almost 500 amps. I've seen as high as 470 something amps on the charger. And I think we're looking at that right there. I think it shows 475. And that is, you know, that's almost maxing out CCS. The problem is the F-150 Lightning's battery pack voltage is so low that if you're, you know, even at 475 amps, at low states of charge, this thing's at 320, 330 volts charging voltage. And that means you're into that 150, 160 kilowatt range, which is not much. So in order to get big speeds on the F-150 Lightning, you have to use a 500 amp capable 350 kilowatt charger, because most 150 kilowatt chargers are limited to 350 amps, which means really slow charging. And that's a bit of a shame. And, you know, I understand the reasoning for not going 800 volt tech or in that class of voltage, and it's cost, it's, you know, the actual benefit to the end user is really only when DC fast charging, other than some efficiency gains here or there. Weight savings doesn't matter on a truck like this, right? And I don't think that would even be realized in something like this. And so the sweet spot, I think, is if you're not going to go 800 volt, at least go high 400 volt. Rivian does a pretty good job of this. It ends at 450 volts. And this just shows the inherent, I would say, main disadvantage of the F-150 Lightning. Again, fantastic truck. Would recommend it to everyone. Saw my first one on the road the other day. Dude was waving at me. He was so excited. It was awesome. And like, love the truck. I just think its charging, while not as bad as Mach-E, is the weak point. And it part of that comes from low voltage. Part of that comes from this boost profile that seems a little bit odd to me, why you would give 10 minutes at peak and then ramp down nominally. But at a DC fast charger, there's not much incentive to plug in dead in this truck. You pretty much charge it to 70 or 80% and then go to the next charger. You don't really need to work curves that much. It's pretty flat. And that Tom has spoken about this in his videos too, where, you know, Ford gave us this time over state of charge situation, or time over kilowatt rate. That's dumb. We look at, you know, percentage of state of charge over how much power you can pull. But the thing is, this curve is going to look different every time you plug in, because that boost starts whenever you plug in. So this is a 0 to 90. I hope Tom does like a 10%, and then we got to do a 20 and a 30 and see, you know, where these things. But I charged the truck at least 15 times when I had it. It's a 10-minute boost, plus or minus a minute here or there, and then it ramps down nominally.
So it's consistent.
Yeah, and interesting that you say that, Kyle. And I'll definitely do that when I have it for a long term. You know, once I get mine, I'm gonna do all kind of charge recordings. But I've had about 20 people message me and ask me the same question that you just have not really asked me, but kind of say that, you know, they've seen people plug in and the charging curve is different than what I talked about. Because I talked about the 0 to 100. It will be different every time you plug in, because when, no matter what the state of charge is, even up to a kind of a high state of charge, over 50% state of charge, when you plug in, you get that boost. So the charging curve is going to look different at every state of charge. You know, it's, but I kind of understand why Ford did that. And it's good if you just need an extra boost. You know, and if you're not going, you know, 2000 miles, let's say, you know, you need to plug in once on your trip to add an extra 150 miles or whatever to your trip. What they're basically giving you is almost at any state of charge that you plug in, I mean, other than something stupid high, which you'd never plug in at, you're going to get 10 minutes of max power. So, okay. You know, if all you need is a 15, 20, this is going to work for you. But if you're going really long distance, like if you need to stop four or five times to get to your destination, then, it, you know, it does. There's no advantage to it. But there is an advantage I see when you just need that one quick stop to add an extra 100 miles. You don't have to drive the car down under 10% like we always say to do. You can plug in at 20%. You can plug in at 30%. And you're going to get that boost for a short period of time.
And actually even better at higher states of charge because you have a bit more pack voltage. So like I've seen, you know, when we did the first drive, I know you took it to a charger. I saw 177 kilowatt peak or 175, something like that. Whereas in this test, because it gave me the boost, but I was at much lower pack voltage, I only saw a peak of 170 kilowatts plus or minus. And so that's just the nature of Ford's vehicles. Now, the reason they do this, I'm speculating, and I know Ford people listen to this podcast, so maybe they'll email me and tell me if I'm completely off base, but I think I'm onto something. It's really expensive and difficult to put sensors everywhere in your high voltage system. And so from contactors to different spots in the battery to inlet ports to cable connections all throughout that system. And I think they've modeled that 10 minutes at 475 amps pretty much heats everything up to the point where they are comfortable having things unmonitored. And then it backs down because of the unknown, because they don't have sensors everywhere. That's their strategy. Now, other car companies will put sensors everywhere, but that costs a lot. Keep in mind, the F-150 Lightning's 40 grand base. More sensors means more cost, means more complexity. So I think it's a fine trade-off, in my opinion. It's a charging curve, and I said in the video, but it's a long one. You don't really have to watch it. You get the idea here. I said it's pretty much a charging curve that would not stop me from buying the vehicle, and it's a livable Ford charging curve. The Mustang Mach-E still bothers me. This one, I'd live with it, and you just charge it to 70 or 80% at a charger. It took a full hour and 12 minutes to go 0 to 90%. But keep in mind, pretty large battery pack.
Right. And most people wouldn't say the 90. They'll leave at 75 or 80%. And it looks like 70 is like really where the cutoff is, right?
Yeah, and that, I think that was just because we were getting the battery pack a little bit warm-ish around there. Hard to say. Oh, okay. I think I would recommend like a 75%, like just get out of there at that point. The one other thing to keep in mind here, though, is – oh, I had one more point, and I can't remember what it was, but I'll get to it at some point. Sorry.
Okay. So someone was asking, Tom, what's the deal with your truck, man? Where's your Ford Lightning?
I wish. Sorry. So it was built May 18th, and I got the notification the truck was built, and it said your delivery window is June 6th to June 12th. So June 12th comes and I get an email. Your delivery window is now June 13th to June 20th. And on June 20th, I get another email. Your delivery window is now June 24th to June 30th. So when I go on my online portal to check, it still says that it's nothing has changed. It's not even on a carrier yet out of Detroit. And, you know, it's crazy because it's been 5 weeks now and it's just sitting there. I don't know if they don't have enough trucks or enough drivers to drive the truck or if my region is getting low priority. But I'm watching people take delivery of their trucks that the trucks weren't built when mine was. You know, it was their trucks completed production after mine and they're getting their trucks. So I don't know, guys. I'm waiting to hear from my dealers, just like you guys are waiting to hear from me.
If it's sitting there at 50%, you're absolutely fine. If it's sitting there at 5%, you're in trouble.
And that's the big unknown. We've seen trucks get delivered at 0% state of charge.
How does that even work, though? Like, because they have, we saw the inside of the plant, the Ford manufacturing plant with Lacey. And I believe she said they have like a whole bunch of charging set up at the end of the lines, right?
Yeah, they've already charged.
I've been there, Dom. Yeah.
Right.
They've got a bunch of them at the end of the line, and then they have some more off to the side. So, you know, but I don't know what their protocol is. I would assume they would, you know, take it up to 70% or so and pull it off the lot. You wouldn't take it to 100%, but it should be fine sitting there. The cars don't bleed that much, you know, just sitting in a parking lot, unless it's a Tesla.
Yeah, but if you leave it on. if you leave it open, if a guy forgets to shut the AC off, like the F-150s will run all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, if somebody makes a mistake, that can happen. It shouldn't happen if it's locked and everything's done properly. You would think they have a set procedure that they do on all the vehicles. But, you know, who knows? I don't know what I'm about to ping, you know, my contacts are for and say, I'm just curious. What's going on with this? Do you have any information? Can I come pick it up there? And I'll fly there and drive the darn thing home. But I'm sure they won't let me do that. But I mean, I'd be willing to do that at this point. I want to get my truck. And I sold my Toyota like a month ago. So now we're running one vehicle in the house. Luckily, it hasn't been difficult because I had a car on loan for 5 weeks straight now between the BMWs I had. Then I had an EV6. I got a Chevy Bolt EUV now, which I drove to the Rivian R1S drive, and I charged it. I tweeted out a picture on one of the Rivian Waypoint chargers that were just installed here. So I have an EUV. I'm going to do range testing, charging, all that stuff coming up in the next week or so. Those videos should be out. But so far, I'm super happy with used Super Cruise all the way up here. I drove to the R1S media drive because it was about 160 miles from my house. They're doing it here on the East Coast. And, you know, I used the Super Cruise the whole way up and it worked really well.
Nice.
You know, I remember, I'm sorry to cut everyone off. There was one F-150 Lightning thing that someone commented and reminded me, and it's really quick. The truck only charges to 90% on a DC fast charger unless you go like four menus deep and set it to go to 100.
That's good to know too, right?
It's called a one-time charging limit.
Really? Okay. So generally,
and that's almost just on a DC fast charger, Kyle. Like it wouldn't be for home charging on level two.
In my experience, it's just DC fast chargers, and you can set the limit anytime, and it adapts. Mm-hmm. But just naturally, you plug in a DC fast charger, it goes to 90. You plug in a level two, it seems to go to 100. But again, I only full charged it maybe twice or three times, so it's hard to know exactly.
I'll play with that when I get mine and really figure out exactly how that works.
So we're super short on time, but Tom, you did a video this week with Tesla and non-Tesla charging adapters, everything you need to know. So I just want to make sure that people know that that's out there available for them on the on the State of Charge channel.
Yeah, it's on State of Charge, also on Inside EVs. I get a lot of questions. People would email me, Tom, I have a Ioniq 5 and I also own a Tesla. Get an adapter, which one do you recommend? And now with all the CCS adapters that are coming out, I finally got a hold of the legit Tesla CCS one adapter and I compared it to the other. I have the EV Hub CCS one adapter and the Electron CCS one adapter and the CHAdeMO adapter. I pretty much used them all, explained what they're for, why you might want to use one, and you know, why you don't maybe a lot of people don't need any adapters, you know, I tried to. It was half educational and trying to explain what these adapters do and why you may or may not need one. And that's on my State of Charge channel.
Sweet. And you also did a range test, a 70 mile an hour range test with the BMW iX xDrive 50 this week. And I believe that's on the Inside EVs YouTube channel.
Yeah, the iX xDrive 50 did really well.
So right.
145 miles EPA range rating, the combined EPA range rating is 324 miles. So we went 21 miles past the combined EPA range rating. We don't have the highway EPA range rating because that wasn't published. That would be less than the combined. And it would probably be somewhere around, you know, 310-ish, somewhere around there. So we really crushed that. And it does have the 20-inch wheels, which have the longest EPA range rating. If you get it with the 21-inch wheels, the EPA range rating is 305. If you get it with the 22-inch wheels, it's 315, which is weird. Usually the larger the size diameter wheel, you get less range, but I guess the 22-inch wheels are maybe they're lighter than the 21s or just more aerodynamic because that has a better range rating. But this one has the best range rating with the 20s. And we finished up with a consumption rating of 3.25 miles per kilowatt hour, which is, in my opinion, fantastic for that type of a vehicle. The big, you know, full-size SUV to finish up with more than 3 miles per kilowatt hour is awesome.
So really you, well. you started to break up a little bit at the very beginning of that when you gave the total range. So it's rated for 321 miles.
What was 324.
24 miles. Right.
And that's the combined EPA range rating.
Right. So at 70 miles an hour, it did way better than that. That's amazing.
Yeah, 345, which is like 6.5% better than the combined EPA range rating. Fantastic. It actually is in third place now on the Inside EV's 70 mile an hour highway range test. It only trails the Lucid Air. Oh my God, I'm drawing a blank now. What was the, what came in
it's
number
gotta
two?
It's got to be a Model 3. No, right? Not your all-wheel drive?
Lucid Air, Mercedes,
EQS 450 plus. Yeah. No, wait, my
so
Model
this
3
car. Farther than your Plaid test?
Yeah, the Plaid went 300 on the nose, Kyle.
Wow.
But
I can't run mine on the Arrows.
Yeah, so, that's a big difference. I had the arachnid wheels. Now, I've been trying to get a non-Plaid Model S with the Aero wheels to do the 70 mile an hour highway range. Obviously, we can't ask Tesla for it. Don't give you cars like the other manufacturers do, but I think I have a friend now that's willing to loan me one, and that should be, you know, that's the longest range Tesla that should get up there, and you know, maybe be in second or third place. I don't know. It's not going to beat the Lucid Air, but it may beat the EQS. I don't know if it's going to beat the EQS. The EQS was fantastic, but I think it's going to nudge ahead of the iX.
The iX just seems to be so freaking cool, doesn't
right.
it?
My neighbor a few houses down just took delivery of his, and every time I walk past, I stop. And honestly, if anyone's worried about the grill or the styling, and I get it, I totally understand.
Sure.
In person, I found the car much more in, because it's a big vehicle, much more in proportion. And I wasn't staring at it thinking, that nose, that grill is terrible. Honestly, in person, it is also a very beautiful car. All the proportions are right. I swear that if he looks out of his window, he thinks I'm going to be casing his house or something, because he's like, there's that dude staring outside my house again. But I always stop and have a look. And, you know, I don't know him to talk to, but if I saw him cleaning it at the weekend, it's like I'd stop and say hello.
You should leave him a note and be like, I need to borrow your car.
Like, dude, your car is amazing. I don't even know what spec it is, but it is very, very nice.
And the back of it, Martin, looks so good, doesn't it?
Really? He reverses into his driveway every time, so I get the full-on, I get the frontal view.
Full frontal IX.
I get full frontal, okay. But I think it looks great as well.
Right on. Yeah. Okay, we should probably talk about some news. Let's see, was there anything else left that we did? I missed anything? No, it looks good.
Oh, I have a question to pose to the audience.
Sure.
We did a Costco run the other day, and we put a whole bunch of stuff in the e-tron to shuttle over to the office, and a entire fresh bottle of bourbon exploded in the passenger seat. Oh. And so we don't know how to clean that. And so curious if we need to redo the entire carpet and seat, or if there's something, because it's just in the seat now. It's not
which vehicle?
Our e-tron. Which is a very expensive seat because it's the massage with the air conditioning. So I was like, let's run the AC and blow this thing out, but it didn't work.
Probably smells pretty good in there.
I mean, we left all the windows down last night to try and air it out. We have an ozone machine thing that we're going to put in there. We've been through this with our Model 3 with beer exploding in the trunk of it, but never whiskey. And it just whiskey seems explodes? Like we're totally screwed.
Yeah, if you've ever seen a seat taken apart, there's a lot of foam in a typical modern seat. And as you say, when it gets in, it's kind of that closed foam, that almost like memory foam in beds. If it's in that, you're not going to be able to get it out with a carpet cleaner or a typical kind of suction thing. So that is... Yep. That's a head scratcher.
It's not good. Alyssa called me yesterday because I was out bringing wheels over to the Model S, and she's like, we got a problem. The entire, and it's like a big bottle, just explosion. And all in there. Like, not booze. Even a drop. It's in the seat. Nah,
man. And booze is all sugar as well. So, like, when the alcohol goes, it's sugar. So
it's going to be a disaster.
Sugar is not good for.
Every time you get pulled over, they're going to be like, "You've been drinking in here, guys."
right.
Well, thankfully, the car's got the fragrances. we'll put on the summer fragrance, which can help blow that out.
Hello, Ossifer.
Hello, Ossifer. Nothing to see here.
talking of the e-tron, you did inspire me to have a look at used prices, by the way, because we've started talking about what comes next this summer after the MG ZS, and I think it's going to be Kona, because they're about 32, which is still, I think, wildly expensive for a used Kona. But that's
at
the
that
price.
Point, how far away is an Ioniq
or a Megane?
Well, that's about 40 for an Ioniq 5. So then my wife was like, well, what do we do after that in 6 months' time, kind of planning our next cars? And I said, well, let's just look at what I think the top of the market is doing. And we saw a lot of depreciation on the e-tron that you've got and the Jag I-Pace. And yes, getting a really beautiful spec for 45 grand.
Whoa,
and actually,
that's the move.
Like, and we're okay. Well, we can't do that yet, but it's not far away, and you think, wow, that's a whole different class. You know, when a Model 3 standard range is 45 now in the UK, I was really surprised. Considering all EV prices are so inflated, I couldn't believe it. So, but particularly the Jaguar I-Pace, because they're getting on a bit now. It'd be 3 years old, decent mileage on them, but still the SE or the HSE spec, I mean, that is as fully loaded as any decent car is going to get. So I shall keep you updated on what we do car-wise.
The Megane prices came out for England, for the UK this week, right? About £35,000?
Starts at £35,000 to get in the Megane. There's three specs from 35. The top spec is 40 before you tick any options, which, again, I think reflects where I need to reprogram my brain, because that sounds wildly expensive, but maybe cars are more expensive and I haven't adjusted yet.
People have been saying in comments today about something about Tesla price raise. I think they raised I think we talked about that last week, so I'm not sure if they raised them yet.
Wasn't there another price raise on the Model Ys?
I'm looking at the Model Y page right now, and it says Model Y long range is $65,990 purchase.
What about the made in Austin one?
$61,990. It was $59,990. It's kind of off menu. So what they're doing is they're adding it to the inventory page. Obviously not the used inventory, the new. Because if they said you can now order the Austin, I think it would kill the Fremont cars, because a lot of Tesla owners want latest, greatest new toys. So they're not announcing it, and they're putting it every time they make a batch of Austin made ones, I think, and there's none available today. I checked at midday 3 hours ago. They're putting it onto the new inventory page. You need to look for the EPA 279 number. That's how you know it's an Austin-made Model Y. It's labeled standard range, 279 miles. It's just gone up, though, from $59,990 to $61,990. And if you find one, let us know. And if you find one and buy one, because then you skip the queue. Because you could literally check in, you know, a few hours' time, and if you see one, buy it, and you get one straight away. It's inventory. It's ready to go.
I found the inventory. It's like tesla.com/inventory. And yeah, no Model Ys here today. One Model S plaid.
Yeah. So nothing. But let us know. If you find one or you buy one, let us know. We'd love to know your experience.
Yeah, actually, that's the only thing they have in inventory. Oh, that's within 200 miles. Oops.
Oh, there you go.
My bad. Okay. So maybe in other parts of the country.
I've been out of the loop this week doing a bunch of range tests, and now the with Rivian for the last few days. What did I see about Toyota saying, or God, what was it that the wheel was, which car was it that the wheel would fall off?
BZ4X.
That and the Subaru Solterra. So they're recalling 2,700 BZ4Xs, which could be all of them,
right, and
2,600 Solterras on a hub wheel nut that can come off and the wheel can fall off. So that's not an over-the-air update, I'm afraid, guys. That is, if you bought one of these, Toyota share price took a big old dip on that news as well, because they've not exactly got off to a flying start with EVs, and then they've got to get them all back. But that's nothing, that's not even a battery or BMS or inverter.
These.
Like, that's right. Toyota getting, like, how do you put a wheel on? So, yeah.
That's embarrassing.
Seems like an exciting moment to happen while driving.
Oh, jeez.
It'll be the most exciting thing you ever happens to drive one of those cars.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the most exciting thing that happened to me when I was driving a car. When I was in high school with my friend, we were working. He had a 67 Mustang that we were always doing work to. And what happened was the drive shaft broke while we were driving it. Something broke on it, and it wrapped around the parking brake cable.
Oh, geez.
The parking brake cable spun and caught on it and wrapped around when it dropped down. So we're going like 60 miles an hour, and the full parking, the rear brakes, you know, doing the drive shaft snaps, the brakes go on. So we're on the highway like this, as the rear end's kicking out. This old Mustang, parts are flying off it because we were like, you know, rebuilding that thing. And that I mean, I don't think anything that'll ever happen to me, unless I roll a car, will be.
Man.
More exciting than that, because that was just in that there were cars spinning out like that. We're cutting off because we're almost spinning out. That was nuts. So I think a wheel falling off, I would be under more control than what happened when that happened.
Man, Don Emery says, Jesus, take the wheel. Wait, not that wheel.
Wow.
All right. So we should talk about some news real quick. So let's see. 2024 Polestar 5 first powertrain details. So this just debuted at the Goodwood Festival of Speed, I believe they call it. It's an event over in England where people race up and down in some large, huge driveway. And there it is. We can see it really quickly on the screen. It looks pretty good. This is derived from the Precept concept, and it's going to be like really. I think it replaces like the Polestar 1 as the flagship of the company's lineup, basically.
Totally. So 800-volt architecture, powertrain made by the Polestar UK team, the car designed by – oh, no, other way around. The car using a unibody designed by the UK, the powertrain all done from Sweden, 800-volt dual motor, crazy powerful, crazy torque, 2024. And, yeah, as Dom says, this will be the Halo car.
Right.
It looks like a proper GT. Even it doesn't need a bonnet that big, but I think they've styled it to look like a proper GT car, and it looks gorgeous.
Can we run that video a little bit? See it going?
We have uploaded them to our own. We have it's not YouTube. We have our own thing,
right?
And that doesn't work for me. So,
it's like a really good thing, Martin.
Oh, I know.
So I just tried playing it, and it said video will not play. So,
you know what happened to us the other day? We were sitting here watching TV over dinner, and we saw a video of a boat come up, and you narrated the video.
No way.
Yeah. I was like, I know that guy. And you can very much tell
that
it was
voice.
Like the Italian team that gave you a Google Translate.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like, not everything made sense.
Was this the Lamborghini boat? Or
yes.
The... Yeah, right? It costs like millions. And
yes.
I got sent a script to do a voiceover. And I replied back and I was like, dude, you've put this into Google Translate because it's not actual English. And they're like, don't worry about it. Just read it. I'm like, okay. Hey, if you're paying me, I'll read the words on the page.
That's what it sounded like. It was great.
That's got like millions of views already. So,
well, we added one to it because we were watching these custom boats and we were looking up electric boats. And then this one came up and Timon was watching. I'm like, that's Martin.
That's the dude with the podcast.
There's some nice electric boats coming out there. A lot of them in Scandinavia. But I don't know what kind of boat. Were you looking for a specific boat, Kyle, or are you just looking at?
Oh, well, Alyssa really wants us to try and start reviewing electric boats, and we already have the channel Out of Spec Boatering reserved. And so we're just dipping our toes into the it'll be years, but we're just starting to research stuff.
You should reach out to the Taiga team. I believe they're doing some jet ski or not,
yes,
watercraft.
Already in contact with them, and ARC as well as one that we're quite interested in.
Right.
There's ARC a ferry nice company boats. That goes from where we are over to France. Well, I'm in Bournemouth, but along the coast is Portsmouth, the city where it's a big port. And that's the ferries go from France, and they're just about to start running their hybrid ferries, which is a 10 megawatt hour battery. So that would be a very cool next time you're over. go and make it's hybrid. So when it's in port, it runs on batteries, and when it's maneuvering, it's batteries. And then when it goes out across the channel to France, I think it runs on LNG or something, or sort of natural gas. But yeah, otherwise, big battery. So yeah, I think there's a lot of interest in electric boating, and there's big progress being made.
Yep, and electric aircraft.
Oh yes,
yes. Hey, so, I don't know what YouTube name that is, but I don't think that's pronounceable. But anyway, they say no discussion on the Polestar 3, which was also revealed and more relevant in the present time. Did you guys see the Polestar 3? I haven't seen anything about the Polestar 3.
No, I haven't. No. I'd like to know where it was revealed.
I know there was another Polestar 2, the Polestar 2 that they ran last year at Goodwood. It was also at Goodwood.
Oh, it looks so good.
Yeah, it does, right? Yeah, we talked about that last year. I don't know if we have a clip of that somewhere.
Well, this is the new special edition performance-y one that they're actually building.
Oh, really?
Yeah, one's the legit one.
I thought it was a little different from... I thought it was the same thing they had there last year.
Oh, it's possible, but I'm pretty sure this is their new special edition that they're making 100 or 200 units of.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it looks incredible.
I did see that. I don't know if Martin can find a clip of that somewhere. We have a bunch of clips of electric vehicles going up to the driveway at Goodwood Festival of Speed. So there's the
five. There we go.
There was a Polestar 5, and so that looks good. And you can go. You can watch it on that video on the Inside EVs post.
That looks great. Proper GT car.
Yeah, it does look great. Oh. It's big, right? It's bigger than I kind of thought it was going to be at first. But then recently some images came out of it from from China. There was a bunch of images came out from a government website, but no color.
Oh, yeah.
Monochrome shots. And you could kind of get a look at it, and it's like, oh, this is kind of like big.
Yeah.
Kind of like, it looks better with some paint on it, and it's got a nice camo going on there. Oh.
Hey, look at the time. Tom, have you got a dash?
Yeah, I've pretty much got to take off now. We're finishing up the R1S drive. I only have another hour with the vehicle, and I'm going to jump off and do that.
Okay.
Have fun, guys, and catch you next week.
See you next week.
I'm leaving, too. I'll see you all later on.
All right, take care.
All right.
All right.
I got to go to Denver for a meeting. Sorry.
All right. Take care. See you next week.
See ya.
Okay. Say, Martin, hopefully you can stick around just for a couple of minutes because
we've got some more news today.
At least talk about some prices. We should have talked about this first, maybe. Okay. Let's skip down to the Ford Pro electric supervan is an e-transit custom gone wild. So Ford in Europe has been doing this supervan thing for a long time now. I understand they
50 years. Yeah. The name supervan has been around 50 years, and they've kind of gone, you know what, let's make it all electric and bonkers. So they have.
Right. It looks great, but this is this is the new basically it looks like the new e-transit that's going to be sold in Europe. I believe it's going to be built in Turkey, but that's only happening next year. So this is, it sort of looks like that, but it's really like a tube steel frame with the right looking skin stretched over it, and two motors to make around 2,000 horsepower, I forget the exact number, but that's a lot. 2,000 horsepower. And I'm not sure the regular, you can see on this picture here, it has the screen from the Mach-E or the higher trim levels of the Ford F-150 Lightning. So it's got the big screen, and it's got some good data capture as far as technology goes. So people on the sidelines can capture what's going on with the car, maybe make adjustments as it's going. The other trick thing it has is a tire cleaning mode, they call it, where you can lock either of the axles and then burn out on the other axle. This is all-wheel drive. So, yeah, I imagine we're going to see this at a drag strip at some point. Centipod, is that what it's called up there?
Yeah, and also Ford Performance have got a long history of making interesting things like this that we'll see at various places. Yeah.
Right on. Yeah, so that's kind of interesting. And there's some video of that on the Inside EV's website. Just, I guess, search transit van, maybe? Okay. The other bit of news we needed to talk about today is the 2023 Nissan Leaf now starts at $27,800. So this is a new pricing for the for next year's Leaf or the 2023 Leaf, and it's going up by $400. And that's before. So it's 27.8 before subsidies. The you know if you're eligible for all the $7,500 federal rebate, it still gets that for a while yet. I'm not sure how much longer that's going to be around for Nissan, but and there's also a destination handling fee.
They're getting close, aren't they? I remember reading something that they're getting close to 200,000, but I don't know how whether it's weeks or months.
So without that, this is ends up being more expensive than the Chevy Bolt now.
For a lot, just, for 100 miles less range, right?
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know, what's the word, embarrassing.
Well, it's a CHAdeMO connector, which is fine. You can occasionally road trip. You can find a CHAdeMO. And if you don't do big road trips, again, it's fine. But it's 100 miles range less than a Bolt for pretty high money. So anyone in the comments would be tempted by this. And it says significant upgrades, but I've not seen the news this week. Do you know what they're adding to it?
It's got a redesigned grille and front fascia and headlights and a new optional 17-inch multi-spoke wheels. And let's see, has a new Nissan brand logo on the inside. The 2023 Nissan Leaf features new black cloth seating upholstery with gray finishes on the S-grade or gloss black finishes on the SUV Plus. And all the models feature the Safety Shield 360 suite as standard, including six active driver assistance technologies. So, I mean, it's got a few small things, but yeah, a Chevy Bolt looks like a better deal, unless you can take advantage of the full $7,500 tax credit, because then you could get it down to $21,400 for the base price, which...
And then state-level incentives. You're right, actually, yeah. If you can take advantage of that and you get a pretty decent EV for, you know, maybe 16 to 18 grand, depending on where you are, then it actually looks like a pretty good deal.
Right. And I'm looking at the redesign of the fascia, whatever. It's not that different from the outgoing model, I don't think.
No.
It's pretty unoffensive. I don't know what to say about it. It's...
Yeah, they're not upgrades though. Like the new Nissan brand logo,
right? That's not an upgrade.
That's just you getting your car on brand. So
right. Yeah. Oh, it looks like it lights up on our front image there. It's got the Nissan thing lighting up on the nose. A lot of people, some people like that, and some people do not like that at all. But yeah. So
hey, good shout by Gary. Actually, I didn't make that connection. Would the Leaf drain? So the Aria is going to arrive soon.
That's true.
Are they going to use up their 200,000 on this when they really need to be focusing on the Aria, because that's the proper EV that's got active thermal management and it's going to be a very high price, but that's the future, not the Leaf. So I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, good shout, Gary.
Yeah. Yeah. Robin Yateman says Uber drivers get a discount. I guess that's on the Leaf. That's my sister, by the way. Hey, Rob.
There you go. Uber drivers get a discount. Okay.
All right. Anything else we need to talk about? It's our time. Oh, it's a short show today, Martin.
I know. Lots of stuff appearing at Goodwood that we can maybe talk about next week, because the Kia EV6 GT is unveiled, which is not the GT line, but the full-blown GT. I don't know the pricing, but that gets unveiled this weekend at Goodwood. So 3.5 seconds, 0-62 or 100 kph, which is decent. We've talked about Polestar, Mercedes-Benz EQXX, which is their engineering concept, just drove from Stuttgart in Germany to Silverstone, which is the Formula One track, and then down to Goodwood and did 1,202 kilometers on a single charge, which is a 100 kilowatt hour battery. So we can talk about that, because there'll be some news around that. That's an exercise in efficiency, not performance, but that's massively impressive. 1,200 kilometers on 100 kilowatt hour, 8-point-something efficiency. So that's big news. I'm trying to think what else is showing up. Lotus electric stuff, the Electra, the Avaya, that's all at Goodwood. So I'm sure that we'll have some stories next week about those being unveiled. Yeah, there's a lot of electric stuff today, tomorrow, Sunday at Goodwood. So we'll have a wrap of that next week, I think.
Yeah, let me just share this one little clip here. Then this is the I've been watching this car for a little while on this is off the Twitter feed from Goodwood Twitter feed. It's the Charge Mustang. So this is like looks like a Mustang. I think it's a lot of Mustang parts, but I think it's like a carbon fiber body exactly. But it looks like a traditional Mustang, but it's like a got an electric drivetrain, and I don't have any details on it, but I just saw we had this, you know, footage of it actually moving on the track. We've been seeing news about it for the last few years. So I thought it actually exists. It's an actual thing. That's kind of cool. Craig Matsura asks, sorry, got here late. When are you driving the Lyric, Dom? I've already driven it, and I'm writing about it now, and that embargo drops on Monday, so we can talk about it on next week's show. I'm looking forward to that. I've got a bunch of questions addressed to me here. Dominic, when are you getting an EV? I've got an EV. It's a Bolt EV. It's for sale. I'm going to try to sell it next week, and I believe...
Have you found your Bolt yet, is what Nathan asks.
I have not found my Bolt yet. I need to do some shopping. But I do have I may be getting the loan of a car from Mr. Kyle for a little bit. We were talking about it a bit last night. He called me up, and I might be driving to Colorado and driving back with a Model 3 Performance to hang on to for a little while. So I might go on a road trip to Canada with it if I can take it across the border. I have to do some research and things, but I don't really have a whole lot of time in a Tesla, and so this is going to be a great opportunity to, you know, learn all about everything Tesla, and I'm looking forward to that. John Check asks, Dom, what do you think about the tax credit for retired people? I don't know what that is. I'm sorry.
As in, if you've got a lower income.
Oh, right,
and you don't see the $7,500 off next year's tax bill.
Right. I think that $7,500 tax credit was really a bad idea because it doesn't really help the people who need the help, right? It should be a refundable tax credit so that if you don't use the whole thing, you get the rest back in cash, but you don't use in credit on your taxes, you know? So, and that's what they wanted to do with the new Green Deal tax thing that got deep sixed, that didn't happen. And I believe they were working on another, like a smaller tax credit thing recently, and on another different package coming through the Congress. And I believe that also got canceled. Oh, Maki Vlog, I have a dinner invitation when I go to Colorado. Oh, that's cool. Maki Vlog, that'd be great to see you live in Patrick. Right. See, are you not getting the Model 3? Brandon and Jean-Michel Cole. John Michael, sorry. I don't know why I want to pronounce everything like it's French. I am for a little bit. I'm not buying one. Hopefully buying a Bolt. Let's see. Any other news that we should... The Tesla Cybertruck design has been finalized, apparently. We haven't seen it yet. So Elon Musk did a super long interview. They broke it up into three different parts, I believe. And you can find each of those parts on Inside EVs. But super long, like the last section was like over an hour, I believe. And he mentions that the Tesla Cybertruck design has been finalized. We haven't seen it, but I'm sure it looks pretty much like the Cybertruck. But like this, we'll have to see what like the small differences are, what's been changed, like the wiper, I guess, and maybe some of the edges, the surfacing. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
And there were some pictures out this week of. They're putting in some mega chargers for the semi-truck at Frito-Lay. Somebody got a picture of them, and it's not the megawatt charging system that we talked about last week from the Charin industry organization. So that looks like they're doing their own direction on that.
Right, it's true. It's going to be interesting to see how that all works out with the commercial speed, like trucking superchargers or mega chargers, I guess what we want to call it. Other news, so while I was driving the Cadillac Lyric this week, the Cadillac Celestique was teased a bit. There's some images. I don't know if you can pull it up real quick or not.
Yeah.
But the Celestique is like, I don't know if you know anything about this car, Martin, but it's kind of bonkers. Like, this is like a huge sedan. It's going to be handmade, basically. It's not in low volumes, handmade. It's probably going to be, I think, I don't know if they've released the price, but I'm guessing it's going to be like $150,000.
The price that I saw released was more than $200,000.
Oh, okay.
Handmade, small numbers, halo vehicle, more than 200K. Right. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be...
I saw the styling buck for this thing, like, you know, not the real car, but just like it looked like pretty much the car. And I'm sure they've made some small changes to it, but like in person, it's pretty impressive. It was like what I saw was like huge, like long, like old style Cadillac, you know, like, but like even a higher or an actual higher level of luxury, not just like premium or marshmallow suspension like back in the 70s. It's I think it's going to be like a proper, pretty nice car, but it's got to be. Wall Street Journal, Nebula 1701 said insiders says it's 300K, which, wow. You know, once you go up over a couple $100,000 for a car, I'm not sure 50,000 here and there, how big a difference it makes. I've never been a millionaire myself, but,
you want it or you don't. Like, if you want the car, right, it costs 200 or 300, I mean, you want it or you don't. So if you can afford it, but it'd be interesting to see why they're doing that though, and why they're making this car purely for brand, to bring the Cadillac brand into the modern era, and to get the headlines. There'll be more headlines written about this than they could ever possibly expect miles to be driven in it. So right, that might be the reason they're doing it. The budget for this should sit in the marketing department almost rather than production, because it's probably just there to do marketing for the brand.
Right. And I imagine it'll be snapped up pretty quick because it's going to be a unique car, and I think it's going to be pretty desirable. I think people are really going to like it. And so people with, you know, like the kind of cash where they can buy an ultra luxury vehicle like this, it's going to be, they're going to snap it up. John Check asks, do you have a full picture of this new Cadillac, And I don't think that we do. I don't think there's a full picture. It's just like little bits and bytes.
Yeah,
there
isn't one. Yeah.
You can see some of the upholstery inside. It looks like the upholstery inside on the back of the seat. Did you see that? It's kind of like, looks like crushed velour almost. Not crushed velour, but like a velour kind of thing, like harkening back to the 70s. So yeah. It's kind of an interesting touch. It looked kind of good, actually. Okay, we should probably get going, but I did want to give a shout out to Doctor2. Doctor2 is one of our longtime regular viewers and watchers here, and he is on a plane. He's been watching the show, streaming somehow on an airplane. He's going out to pick up his own Lucid Air, and then he's going to drive. He lives on the East Coast somewhere, and I believe he's going to drive it all the way back from California. So congratulations on your car, Doctor. I know you've been looking forward to this for quite a while, and we hope you have a great and safe drive back, and looking forward to hearing about it. Yeah.
An early comment from a long time ago.
Okay.
So he's on a Delta flight right now, watching us live with the in-flight Wi-Fi.
That's great.
Safe journey. And let us know, like, you know, next week or via email, or send us pictures of what you think of your car.
I've never been able to stream on an airplane. Even like videos on Twitter, you can't. I don't know what he's got going on there.
I don't really want to. It's like the last bastion of not working and using my phone, but Wi-Fi is so common on flights now. It's like, no, they broke it. That was the last bit of peace we could get.
Right. That's your moment to watch like movies from the last few months that you never got to go to the theater to see.
No.
All right, so I did want to mention too again that there's a Inside EV's official Rivian R1T review is up now on the Inside EV's YouTube channel, and I believe we probably have an article as well for that. I haven't actually been on the site this morning, but I believe we should have. Yes, we do. By Clint Simone, who we've had on the show with us here before on the podcast, and we'll try to get him on again soon to talk about his thoughts on the R1T and maybe some other things he's been driving. All right. So anything to add, Martin?
No, Polestar went public today. As somebody in the comments keeps spamming us. Obviously, they're like, come on, pump the stock. But there you go. Another one. SPACs have had a terrible, or these, a way of going public without the full-blown IPO and investor roadshows and things. I did a thing recently where I looked at the peak value of all these companies like Lucid and all the other companies that went public using this packaged financial thing, this SPAC, this SPAC. And from where they peaked to where they are now, I know it's been a terrible with inflation numbers and everyone's down, but it's been a disaster. So ABB have cancelled their ABB. We're going to publicly spin off their charging or their energy thing. They've cancelled that for now because of market conditions. But Polestar have gone ahead, went public today. Congratulations to the team there. I hope it's a success. Difficult market conditions to go public. But yeah, you can now, I think it's PSNY is the ticker. And you can now own your bit of Polestar if you particularly want to. This is not a financial podcast and never will be because none of us are experts, but there you go.
PSNY. I'm not getting, I'm looking at my, my Google Finance page and I have, I still have it under Gore's Guggenheim Inc. The company is emerging with to make the new thing.
So we'll wait and see, because they've largely been a disaster in terms of how they've gone, but not a disaster for those that were on options and have made money personally.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was a pretty obvious kind of bubble. Valuations were kind of, and it's kind of reversed the other way now. Some of these companies that I think are, you know, very like the Rivian. Like, I'm not a stock expert. This is not advice. But the Rivian stock is down to $30, and you know, it was like I think it maxed out close to 150 or 130, something kind of nuts. That was, it had no business being up that high. People had no business, you know, I don't know what the speculation was going on there, but 29 strikes me as being super low. So it might be a good investment over a long term. I don't know. It's not stock advice. Also interesting is like this week. So on those interviews I was talking about with Elon Musk, he was saying, explaining how they're burning billions of dollars. They're basically, the two new gigafactories are furnaces for money, and they're burning billions of dollars because they spent billions of dollars building these things, and they're not producing enough cars to make profits because, for one, it takes a while to scale production up, right? And they're also getting hit by shortages, supply chain issues. I don't know if he is specific about which supply chain issues, but it's kind of weird. So the stock market's like the bizarrest kind of thing, because usually you would think a CEO comes out publicly and says, "Oh yeah, well, we're our brand new factories are just, you know, burning cash like crazy, and maybe we'll go bankrupt. I don't know." So you think, I don't know, that would be bad news to the stock, and the stock is already like practically halved from its all-time highs. But no,
there's the price where the stock went up. I think Tesla will write off. I think they'll write off this quarter because they exported from China 60 vehicles in April and none in May, or other way around, 60 in March and none in April, and May came back completely. So they're going to have a massive problem with their financials from the China impact. They got a big impairment charge from the price of Bitcoin, which last time I looked was hovering around $20,000, and then supply chains as well. So I think they might just bundle all of that bad news into Q2. The market won't care because the market doesn't have any sensibility around Tesla, and people will carry on buying it. So it will be a horrible quarter, and then I think the rest of the year should be, depending on supply chains, better for Tesla.
They still have that big Bitcoin investment?
If they still have it. They haven't announced that they've sold it.
Right. I want to think that Elon has diamond hands when it comes to that kind of stuff. I'm not a big proponent of cryptocurrencies or anything, and whatever.
So there'll be a big hit because they have to account for that low price that it hit, even though it's bounced back a little bit. I think it hit a low of 17,000 and something. But hey, not a financial podcast. We don't pretend to be. It is moderately interesting because it is so highly followed by the retail community.
Right.
But hey, as long as Tesla generates a profit, as long as all the EV car companies generate a profit, it means they've got money to invest and move forward. And that's all we want. We want great electric cars hitting the market, don't we? So
Right. So just to wrap up my thoughts on the Tesla stock price. So right now it's at $725.91, which is it's gone up over the last day or so with that news. So okay. This is interesting. All right. So I guess that's it. That brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs Forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. I want to see all kinds of thumbs up this week if you're watching us on YouTube. And don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Logney, that's with two M's, at Tomolog. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at...
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Dominic_Y, click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. So just like you, he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.